I don't know if I'm broadcasting yet, but if you can hear me, there have been some delays due to the storm. We are here and we're about to get started. It snowed in New York and we went from nothing to 2 feet in one night within 24 hours. So it's been pretty crazy. Couldn't get into the studio because a lot of businesses are closed because of the snow. And I have a wonderful guest I'm excited about who is going to be Skyping me instead of being here in person because, again, snow. So how is everyone else doing out there? And did you get hit by this snow apocalypse? Are you alive and well? New York's really efficiently digging out the city, so that's something. Talking about books and writing on this snowy afternoon here. Thanks for joining me. Here we go.
Rescue me now. I've fallen into deep. Oh, follow me down. You're falling into deep. Oh, into deep. Oh, into deep. Oh, into deep. Oh, into
a kiss can be a comma, a question mark, an exclamation point. That's basic spelling that every woman ought to know. Mistinguet, it's a French word, is known to have said that. My name is Swan, and I'm blowing you kisses from the basement of the Velo bike shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We have a wonderful person here today in digital form. We'll figure it out, I hope. But we have Tris Stein, who is a small-town girl from New York's Derry County, spent most of her adult life living and working in New York City, and she has the useful double vision of a stranger and a resident, and you can tell this in her mystery novels about Brooklyn, ever fascinating, ever-changing, ever-challenging adopted home. Okay, so continuing, Tris is pursuing writing as a third career. Her first two jobs inspired her work now. She worked as a children's librarian in a dozen sharply different Brooklyn communities. And the second was many years in business research in settings from a major global consulting to DC Comics. She's recently released her third mystery novel, Brooklyn Secrets. When was that released, Tris?
December.
In December.
It's brand new.
In this last December. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the storylines in your other books, but I still am not getting audio through. Okay, thank you all so much for your patience. What a scattered show. Are you there?
Hello?
Ah, here we go. Okay, let's have a quick conversation.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, brilliant. So I wanted to do a quick summary of your first two novels, and then we can talk about the novel you have just released in December. So I'll go ahead and do, like, my quick version, if you will, and then you can fill any gaps. So the first book you wrote was Brooklyn Bones.
Yes.
And Brooklyn Bones is basically a mother-daughter are renovating and they find bones in the wall. And obviously there's a story there and they get a lot of attention from a lot of different people and the mystery is unveiled. Her daughter kind of wants to, I think her daughter is the one that's trying to figure it out first, and then she has her own kind of research into what happened. Is that right? Okay, and then the second...
My main character is a historian, so she has a natural interest in, you know, what the heck happened in her house in the past.
Sure. And she's a few things, because this is the same character we're following through the other two books. Her name is Erica Donato, is that correct? Donato?
Yes.
And she is working on her dissertation, and she wants to be a professor and works at a museum working research. So those are key things, as it leads to a lot of contacts and resources that she then uses in her, I guess, investigations, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the second book is Brooklyn Graves.
Yes.
Thank you. And that one, it talks about her solving the mystery of a murdered family. And let me just, this is the one I didn't read. I read the first one and I've read the third one. So the summary I have, but let me let you explain it since you can probably put it together a little bit more articulately than I can.
Okay. There are two things that happen at the beginning that don't seem to be connected, but a savvy mystery reader will guess that they probably are.
Mm-hmm.
A family friend is found murdered, and his body is left in front of his own house.
Okay.
Very shocking.
Yes.
A man with no enemies.
And yes, that is out of the blue.
Yes. And more or less at the same time, on her job, Erica is assigned to help a famous expert on Tiffany glass who wants to do some research at the very beautiful and historical Greenwood Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something strange going on there.
And we follow as she meets people and does her own research, and I imagine a similar thread.
And they uncover a very old mystery that has to do with Tiffany artwork. And also she becomes involved in what happened to her friend. Her friend's family are Russian immigrants who really don't trust the police and ask her to help them find out what happened.
Yes. Great. That seems like a theme. So you're writing stories about Brooklyn, and that seems like a theme in multiple neighborhoods is just distrust of police and sometimes well-grounded. So in the third book you just released, we have the same main character, Erica, and we're following her as she is doing more research and comes across some interesting things. Meet some interesting people. So there's a lot of threads in this story. Now that I'm trying to articulate it, I'm realizing it's involving a girl who she met at the library who was then beat up, and she's hospitalized, and the mom kind of rallies the people, you know, saying somebody did this, let's figure out who. And Erica actually had a class with the mom of the girl who was injured. And so she's able to reach out initially through an academic relationship, and then they kind of get closer. Right after that happens, another girl is killed. And this time, instead of a lot of attention and a lot of people talking about it, it's almost brushed under the rug. It's almost hard, like, unless you were there, you don't know that it happened. And so, of course, these two things are related, and it also ties into the town of Brownsville is where all this takes place. And Erica...
It's a neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Oh, yes, neighborhood.
Which has always been high poverty and high crime neighborhood.
Yeah. And I met you at a conversation you were doing at the library, and I want to talk about a few things you mentioned during that conversation that are really interesting. And the first is kind of the three ways that a young man in Brownsville could, you know, go on. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Brownsville remains a very tough neighborhood with gangs that become more and less powerful over time.
Mm-hmm.
So the ways that young people in Brownsville have found a way out has been education, which was the older way.
Mm-hmm.
And boxing, mm-hmm. which has always been there. Although the population of Brownsville has changed over the decades, there were ambitious young boxers back two generations ago, and it has produced several championship boxers over the years. Young men who are fighting all the time anyway sort of look at that as a way to have a career.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's crime.
Yeah.
Which, back in the 1930s and the 1920s and 1930s, Brownsville produced a group of criminals that became named Murder, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
They served as the enforcers, essentially, for the larger organized crime in New York. They were the Jewish mafia.
Okay. And they play into this story a little bit in terms of, I guess, relationships. Erica befriends a couple of older ladies who came out of Brownsville, and they both got out through education and marriage and are kind of revisiting their histories there as she's kind of digging into what's happening now. And
all of my books have some history, have a history, historical mystery as well as a crime.
Yeah, well, and I met you at the Brooklyn Resource, what was the room called? Special Collections?
It's the Brooklyn Collection.
The Brooklyn Collection.
And it's the Brooklyn History Department of the Public Library.
Yes. And you are similar to Erica in that you just kind of dig into all these different books and then pull stories out of them. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes, but I can be a little more casual than Erica.
Yeah. So talking about the crime, you mentioned that you blend, you know, history, speculative history, and then fiction. Can you talk about the process of doing that with this book?
Well, sure. You mean with Brooklyn Secrets?
Yeah.
The new one? Yeah, sure. I started out actually wanting to write about crime in Brownsville in the early part of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting, and although lots of people know about it, lots of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
That there was this crime organization, and Brownsville then was very poor,
mm-hmm.
almost completely Jewish. Really struggling, politically very left, lots of socialists. And young people were certainly encouraged to get an education and move up in the world. Mm-hmm. But there were some who decided that crime was easier and faster and more suited to their abilities.
Yes.
So I actually started out wanting to write about that, and then, you know, the big light bulb went on, and I realized if I'm writing a contemporary story, I'm going to have to write about contemporary Brownsville, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I had worked in Brownsville. I worked in the public library there, but it was a long time ago. So I did a lot of very intensive reading and found that it hasn't changed very much. And in fact, just last week, there was a story all over the local papers about a horrifying crime that took place in a Brownsville playground at night.
Oh.
It's a tough neighborhood.
Yeah.
Education now does not always look as if it's a good road out, although there are certainly dedicated teachers who are trying to change that.
Uh-huh, to build that option.
To build options. And boxing is still, Mike Tyson grew up in Brownsville.
Mm-hmm.
And so did a number of other pretty famous boxers, and boxing is still an ambition.
Yeah.
And so I was writing about young people who maybe don't have a lot of choices.
Yeah. And it seems
like... And don't always see the choices they have.
Sure. And it seems like that element of crime also is tied into boxing a little bit. Is that based on fact? And that... Because you include that in your book with one of the characters.
I don't know if you can call it fact exactly. I did do some research on that, too, when the boxing theme started to become more important.
But there's a lot of speculation there as well.
There's always been a lot of speculation.
And then I really like this one passage, kind of jumping around, about libraries. So you worked in the Brownsville Library.
I did.
And I have an affinity for libraries because as a child, that's kind of where I went. If I ever had free time or if I was, you know, ditching school, I would go across the street and hide in the library until somebody found me out. They're just like these sanctuaries. And I'm going to read from your book. The library instantly felt like a refuge from the street outside. It was calm and quiet and pretty, shabby perhaps, but welcoming. It wasn't a bit like the library in my own childhood neighborhood, a building with all the charm of an airplane hangar. I really love the idea of libraries as refuges, because right before this moment, Erica encountered residents of the city of Brownsville, if you will, and they intimidated her, and they were, you know, being themselves, I guess. But you walk through into a library, and it does have a feeling sometimes of, like, this is a place where anybody can go, and they'll be okay, they'll be safe. And you can research, and you can read, and pleasure, you know, anything you're curious about, there's information about. Do you want to speak a little bit about how your experience as a librarian has influenced you as a person and your writing?
Sure. Well, like you, I was a quintessential bookworm, and the library in my hometown. My hometown actually has a quite gorgeous library. Mm. It was built in the more than 100 years ago when there was a lot of money in town,
mm-hmm.
and it was like what you just said. It was kind of my place. And I became a librarian. That wasn't necessarily my ambition, but it was sort of a natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
I went to library school, and I worked for the public library system in Brooklyn. And in the long run, it totally influenced my writing, because the library system liked to move new librarians around to different neighborhoods,
yeah.
Give us a chance every year or two to see a new place and get a sense of the breadth of what was in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So I worked in about, I can't remember, about 7 or 8 different libraries over the time I was there. Every single neighborhood was different. The population of the neighborhoods was different, but the attitude, the history, they were a lot like small towns. And many years later, I thought it would be possible to write a mystery series that takes place in the big city where things are always happening.
Yeah.
But set it in all of these different neighborhoods and try to capture some of the unique qualities of each place.
Sure.
And that came straight from my experience with the public library system.
Mm-hmm. And in the book, there's a couple girls that work in the library and volunteer. Is that kind of a segue for the kids who are looking to get out through education?
Well, for some of them, sure. Sure. You know, they get little jobs at the library, and, you know, some of them are, you know, clueless teenagers. Mm-hmm. But some of them end up being somewhat influenced by the library staff and encouraged to you know, stay in school and do more than maybe they thought of.
Yeah. And the Brooklyn Library has a lot of programs in place that kind of help educate kids and kind of support, I don't know, learning different hobbies and exploring the world of books. I've just...
Sure. Well, that's what a public library is supposed to do.
Right.
And in my day, which was now, really was a whole lifetime ago, that was my first job out of library school.
Huh.
The public library in Brooklyn really was very active in sort of figuring out the needs of each community and meeting them, whatever they were.
Yeah, so Brooklyn Secrets is set in Brownsville. Do you want to talk about where your other two books were set?
Sure. Brooklyn Bones is set in Park Slope,
mm-hmm.
which is where I live, and which has become a very popular sort of hip neighborhood to live in Brooklyn. It has beautiful turn of the last century architecture, you know, the kind of brownstone streets you see in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And for quite a few decades, people have been buying those houses and renovating them. But it wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
And when I moved here, it was still kind of borderline.
Mm-hmm.
And in the decade before we moved here, it had deteriorated. It had gone from being middle class and upper middle class neighborhood to very deteriorated with some big crime problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was writing a story about how all of that change came about. Gentrify is a loaded word and causes a great deal of neighborhood stress.
Yes.
And I wasn't trying to say this is good or bad. I was trying to say this is what it is.
Sure.
And in the process, I've known a lot of people who were renovating their houses one way or another. And I have heard stories about finding bones.
Wow.
And they were like third hand, you know, my contractor says he knows someone.
Yeah.
But I talked to some medical examiner's office who said absolutely they have people come in who found bones while they were working in their house. And usually they are animals, mm. you know, that got trapped in the walls or something.
Sure.
But she said not always. So my idea about finding a person, a body, was not really that far-fetched.
Because it's happened.
I think most of those bodies were probably, this is so sad even to say, were probably babies.
Whose
families wanted to hide them or couldn't afford a funeral for them. My body, in my book, is a teenage girl, and not back in Victorian days, but recently enough so some people know how she got there.
And that's the great secret of the book. And then the second book, do you want to talk a little bit about that neighborhood?
Sure. There's kind of two neighborhoods there, because it's partly about the Russian neighborhood of Brighton Beach, which is, because that's where the man who died and Erica's friends live. That was a neighborhood that was kind of going downhill and was really revived by this huge influx of Russian immigrants about 20 years ago.
Okay.
Depending on who you ask, because there are also people who live there who said, oh, those Russians really destroyed the neighborhood. That's the story of Brooklyn neighborhoods, you know. It all depends on who you ask.
Sure.
So it's partly about that, but it's also partly about Greenwood Cemetery, which is a real place built in the mid-19th century. Although it is a cemetery, it looks like a park. It was a new movement at that time. Woodlawn Cemetery also was built around then. It's landscaped, it has lakes, it has birds, it has... People used to go and take carriage rides and have picnics there.
Uh-huh. It seems like... That's an interesting concept. So it didn't take? It's no longer...
No, it's still used as a cemetery.
Right.
And it's also, on the historic register. It's full of these little chapels that are absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes kind of insanely elaborate. They're mausoleums.
Huh.
Many famous people are buried there. Before it was a cemetery, one of the important battles of the American Revolution took place there on that ground. And there's a big monument to those soldiers. So it's just, for someone who's interested in history or art, it's fascinating. There are chapels there that have Tiffany windows.
Huh.
And so those are interesting from an art perspective.
Sure.
As well. And I kind of got involved with telling a story about the Tiffany Studios, which was a design division of Tiffany that was all women in a time when women mostly didn't have careers. Hmm. In the historical mystery, it revolves around the Tiffany windows and something that has to do with Greenwood Cemetery, of course.
I am excited to read your second book now. It seems like the theme of, from your book, Brooklyn Secrets, I'll read a different passage. She's talking about Williamsburg, the formerly old, rough industrial community right on the edge of the East River. The abandoned factory buildings with huge windows and huge space attracted poor artists, which led to hipster coffee houses and restaurants, which led to real estate development, which led to artists being priced out altogether. A real New York story, maybe the New York story. It is a different, it's kind of a theme of New York, of like neighborhoods invite artistic, creative people, and then other people want to be around them, and then prices go up, and then the neighborhood changes. Is that an intentional inclusion in your books?
Sure. I've seen it. I mean, I've lived in Brooklyn for a long time, and I've seen it happening over the years. Plus, just a secret of writing almost any book, really, and certainly mystery, is that plot comes out of conflict. You know, if everybody's getting along and everybody's happy and all is going smoothly, that's very nice for life, but it doesn't make a story.
Right.
And so what you were just describing, this constant change, and people being forced out of neighborhoods where they've lived a long time, or young people being unable to get a start in life because it's so expensive. All of those things are conflicts.
Yeah. Or for
people's feelings about them.
Yeah. And you talk about Park Slope, how it's in the books, you talk about how it's changed. But even just you living there, you've seen it go from a very potentially shady, possibly dangerous place to, in some ways, a protected place. It's very nice. A lot of restaurants, a lot of small businesses.
Sure.
So
it worked out well for us.
Uh-huh.
Over time, but our children can't afford to buy a house here.
Yeah. I lived there when I first moved to Brooklyn, and I couldn't afford to live there.
Yeah.
So, and now I'm in Bed-Stuy, which is, we've talked about the neighborhood of Bed-Stuy, and I'm really enjoying it. There's a lot of community gardens and really nice people. I've only met nice people so far.
Yeah.
So you are kind of a holder of fun facts. Do you have any fun facts about Bed-Stuy off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head.
I put you on the spot.
Yes, I should have prepared. I wasn't prepared for that question.
Okay.
But I will say that Bed-Stuy, parts of Bed-Stuy have always been very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there are parts of Brooklyn that are very hip now, but actually have no charm architecturally, whatever.
Yeah.
But part of Bed-Stuy was always a beautiful neighborhood, and it seemed poised to sort of solidify for a long time.
Hmm.
And now that is happening, and again, I suppose for some people it's going, for people who are renting, it's not so good because mm-hmm. the rents are just going to go up and up. For people who owned houses there for 20 years,
it's good.
It's good. And for people who are living there, the neighborhood has become more pleasant as it has more amenities.
Yeah.
But it always was looked on in Brooklyn as being a place with considerable potential.
Yeah, I can feel that there and see it around. But there's those coffee shops and hip places popping up, definitely.
Yeah.
And then we had coffee, I think it was last week, and I was really... I really enjoyed your story, and I'll summarize really fast, and then I'd like any thoughts you have. As a writer, you wrote a little bit, and then you had a career and a family, and a lot of things happened, and your writing kind of got set aside, and now it's something that you're revisiting, and you found a publisher who's really interested in the type of books that you happen to be writing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that journey and kind of, you know, getting back into the swing of being a writer?
Sure. Stop me if I'm losing the thread or going on too long.
Okay.
I've been writing on and off most of my adult life, but not really knowing whether I was going to ever get anywhere with it, and life interfered. And I had small children, and I was on maternity leave for a while, and then I went back to work. And having small children and a job is quite a lot in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, okay, I'm done with writing, but it was never done with me. I always ended up going back.
Mm-hmm.
And in my 40s, I said, this is it. I really have to do this if I'm ever going to do it. And I wrote and published a couple of mysteries with a small New York publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Those were... that was Murder at the Class Reunion and Digging Up Death?
Yes.
Great.
And they're very different from what I would write now.
Yeah.
But they were a start. And mm-hmm. just about the time I turned in a third book, the publisher dropped its mystery line.
Mm.
So that was kind of a, a shock, and I parted ways with my agent, and then a lot of other things were happening. My longtime job that I expected to retire from had a complete reorganization and got rid of my department.
Yes.
This was in the same year, and I had some serious health issues. And after all this was done and I had another job and my health was fine, I had completely lost the energy or desire to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came back again. And I kind of tippy-toed into it and wrote some stories and realized I missed it and kind of got back to work and wrote the book that became Brooklyn Bones. It took me a very long time to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then a long time.
How long did it take you to write Brooklyn Bones?
Well, I started it before all this craziness was going on in my
okay.
life.
So
that was 2000.
Ah.
And then I stopped working on it for several years. So I can't even estimate. But
and
eventually,
it was published in 2013. So with big breaks in the middle, generally you were working on it 2000 to 2013?
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
No, actually, I had finished it before 2013. I had finished it and I was looking for an agent.
Oh, that's right.
So maybe 10 years on it, but very on
but
and off.
A lot of things happening in between. Did that story change a lot when you started working on it again?
Yes, it did, because I started a first version, and then when I went back to it after all the job and health issues were resolved and tried to write again, I was writing a second version, which I eventually decided was just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I tossed the second version. And when I went back to it, I got out the first version and rewrote it.
Yeah.
And then the publisher, Poison Pen Press, who are really, really wonderful, when I sent it to them, they said, "We hardly ever do this, but we really like some things in this book, but really still need some work.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider rewriting it for us with our detailed comments?"
Yeah.
So I did that.
Uh-huh.
And they published it.
And here we are.
So that was so on the one hand, I was very lucky that it was the right kind of book and I had the idea of sending it to them and it worked out. And on the other hand, I kind of earned it.
Yeah.
Because I really worked hard at getting this book into shape.
Definitely. So when I read your book, I started it and I mentioned to you that it has this really nice rhythm. It's got like a cadence of kind of like that old time mystery novel, but it's also got a current feeling. It feels like this is the neighborhoods now. This is happening in Brooklyn now, potentially. And so I'm curious, what kind of writing has influenced you that you were drawn to, or what have you read that drew you to writing this, if that makes sense? Do you have any influences or like mentors that you kind of learn from?
Not so much the voice and the character. I wanted to write about a real Brooklyn girl. And living in Brooklyn, having a couple of close friends who really grew up in Brooklyn, it's not that hard, I think, for me to know that. It's not my life, but I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certainly writers, I would say, but there are writers who influenced me to write this series in other ways. I love books that include some mystery.
Okay.
And Margaret Maron is a very highly regarded mystery writer who's written about North Carolina. Her main series is set in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And she moves her character around to different parts of North Carolina, which is a very large and diverse state.
Sure.
And I thought,
do that here.
I could do that with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so I was certainly influenced by that.
Yeah. Margaret Mary.
I love S.J. Roseanne's books, mm-hmm. Which are mostly take place in New York, and I love the way she puts New York in her books.
Okay. What was her name one more time?
She uses her first initials, S.J., and her last name is R-O-Z-A-N.
S.J. Rosen. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There's an English writer named Penelope Lively. She's pretty well known, better known in England, I think, where she's won lots of awards and is highly regarded. Not a mystery writer.
Okay. But she has a similar...
Her books have a lot in them about how the past influences the present.
Huh.
And history, sometimes there's a strong history element. And I have read some of her books and not thought, I wish I could write a book that good, but I wish I wrote that book. That book is perfect.
Nice.
So I would have to say I think a lot of her writing.
Great. One more question for you, and then I'll let you continue with your afternoon. I'm curious if you have any routines or things that you do with your writing, like if you always do longhand and then transcribe it, if you have, you know, a certain time of day that you like to write.
Well, it's funny you ask about longhand, because for a long time, that's what I did.
Uh-huh. But no more? Are you there? Oh, I think we might have lost Triss. Something happened. But we are getting towards the end of our show, so I'll try and get a hold of her again. But if not, I think that we have had a good show considering the madness that led us to this point. Empty Orchestra, I believe, is going to be doing a rebroadcast next. And I will go ahead and try and get a hold of her. One plug. I am curious about the events in Brooklyn. I was talking a lot about things that were going on each week. And if you're listening and that's something that's valuable for you, I haven't done it the past few weeks because I just didn't know. Let me know and maybe I can put together like an email that I can send out every week that has different events or something similar. And then we can, you know, include the things that you're liking on the show. And I would highly recommend, if you like mysteries generally, these were really fun to read, pretty easy reads, as a lot of mysteries are, but also that part of your brain's trying to figure out what's happening, how the things are connected. It doesn't seem like we're getting back in touch with Triss, so thanks so much for listening. This is Ink and Worm. I'm your host, Swan. You've been listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Quick plug, if you like what you hear on my show or any other shows, consider becoming a member of the community and offering a pledge. You can pledge as little as $1 a month, which is $12 a year. And even though that doesn't seem like a lot, it really does help us go a long way in terms of keeping things running, keeping things ad-free, etc. So you can do this at radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. And you can also check out other shows and different things we have going on in the community. It's basically the cost of a cocktail, right? So it's the equivalent of buying us a drink. Cheers to you. Thank you so much for listening. I will leave you with a word, take it or leave it, taciturn.